Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the latest example of the U.S. military's inability to deal with the epidemic of sexual assaults in the ranks following the plea deal to drop charges for sexually assaulting a female subordinate officer, which allowed an Army general to plead to lesser charges of maltreating an Army captain in an unwarranted manner. Jennifer Norris, a former U.S. Air Force tech sergeant who was forced into early retirement because of post-traumatic stress disorder from military sexual trauma, joins us to assess the chances of bills by Senator Kirsten Gillibrand and Congresswoman Jackie Speier moving forward to fix the broken system of military justice. Then we'll examine a nightmare scenario that exposes our post-Citizens United campaign finance system's invitation to political corruption and abuse of nonprofit social welfare groups to hide the identities of those buying corrupt politicians. An investigative reporter who has covered the story from the beginning, Robert Gerke, a politics and government reporter with the Salt Lake Tribune, joins us to discuss his and the Utah House's investigation into the former Attorney General of Utah, who transformed his office into a defender of payday loan companies who secretly funded his election campaign. Then finally, we will speak with Robert Kuttner, the co-founder and co-editor of The American Prospect and author of Debtor's Prison, The Politics of Austerity Versus Possibility. He joins us to discuss his article at the Huffington Post, The Democrats' Obama Problem, and what the president can do to inspire Democratic voters to come out in November to prevent a Republican takeover of the Senate, which will render Obama an early lame duck, effectively paralyzing the last years of his presidency. And joining us now is Jennifer Norris, who's a former U.S. Air Force tech sergeant who was forced into early retirement because of post-traumatic stress disorder from military sexual trauma. She currently volunteers at the Military Rape Crisis Center, helping both active duty and veteran victims of sexual violence. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jennifer Norris.
Thank you for having me.
And Jennifer, this Army General Jeffrey Sinclair pleading guilty to lesser charges has, upset a lot of people and once again brought attention to this broken system of military justice that is controlled by the chain of command. And in this case, the military judge last week suggested that by holding out for more severe punishment and by rejecting an earlier plea deal, the chief Army officer overseeing the prosecution might have been improperly influenced by political considerations in bringing the most severe charges against General Sinclair. That's a very strange piece of logic, isn't it? I mean, he's saying that the prosecutor is charging this guy because of external politics and the sense that something needs to be done about this issue. I mean, what do you make of it?
It goes back to the chain of command argument that we've been having from the get-go, which is, you know, the troops are concerned that the commanders have bias against them as far as pushing forward with a case. And if you want to flip the coin, of course, now a defendant is feeling like the commander's being biased in the other way. And this is the very heart of the argument and why we want to pull it out of the chain of command and put it into the hands of professionals and those that, you know, have places to store DNA and other critical evidence in order to prosecute in the end. It's the very heart of the entire argument.
So this doesn't surprise you then, this judge's ruling last week in allowing Brigadier General Jeffrey Sinclair to avoid prosecution on sexual assault charges and plead to mistreating a junior officer?
No, it doesn't surprise me at all, because it's pretty much what happens with every case that I've ever seen or assisted with. Less than 10% are prosecuted and found guilty in the end. And only 13% in 2012 actually reported. So this case just highlights once again why the troops don't report if the general's allowed to get away with it, then pretty much everybody's allowed to get away with it. And if they aren't going to show the troops that they're going to take things seriously and hold generals accountable to, then how can they take everybody else seriously as well? And whether they mean well or not, it's these positions that leaders are taking that are actually stunting people even more from coming forward.
Well, in this case, to use the very idea that there's a concern out there in the public, and the military judge is saying, well, the prosecution is only trying to show new resolve against sexual misconduct, and then he turns around to make a mockery of it. So that's the part of it that I find extraordinary. In other words, somebody gets off for a sexual assault because sexual assault is a problem in the military, and that he may be being scapegoated for the problem as opposed to being punished for the problem, of which he's pretty clearly guilty, right? Although apparently the prosecution was shaken by revelations that the general's accuser may have lied under oath. What do you make of that part of the decision?
Well, I think that it goes right back to the chain of command argument again, and the concern about undue influence. And I don't know if you remember when there was some backlash on General Amos from the U.S. Marine Corps because he came out with a tough stance on sexual assault. Well, he got slapped down by the defense attorneys for doing just that because it was considered undue influence. And this is exactly, we're going right back to the heart of the problem again, why we want to pull those commanders out of there so we don't have to worry about undue influence and we could just focus on justice, getting justice for the victim and also holding the person who harms another accountable for what they've done.
Again, I'm speaking with Jennifer Norris, who's a former U.S. Air Force tech sergeant who was forced into early retirement because of post-traumatic stress disorder from military sexual trauma. She currently volunteers at the Military Rape Crisis Center, helping both active duty and veteran victims of sexual violence. But the problem here is that, again, this epidemic is not getting the focus and not getting the headlines it deserves. And the statistics are appalling. I mean, it just gets worse and worse and worse. And the figures that are being presented are only a fraction of what really happens because so many victims of sexual assault in the military don't report them. So the problem itself is already underreported, is it not?
Absolutely. It is definitely underreported. What the public is hearing is only the numbers of sexual assaults and rapes. So the 26,000 that they're throwing around is actually only sexual assault and rape. It's not including all the precursor crimes that would be, you know, maybe the sexual harassment or maybe, you know, the bullying or the hazing or any of the kinds of things or the stalking, those kinds of things that kind of build up to the ultimate crime. If we could pay more attention and make those crimes more severe, we could prevent these other crimes from happening. But we're still in crisis mode, focusing just on how we're going to process when someone's actually touched.
So what then happened? I mean, we thought there for a while, just in early March, there was a Senate bill put forth, championed by Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, a Democrat of New York, that would have removed commander's authority from making prosecutorial decisions and then giving that to impartial military prosecutors. So in other words, taking the prosecution out of the hands of the chain of command, because we know a similar thing to this ruling that just took place on General Sinclair happened at the Aviano military base in Italy, where the commanding officer, because he knew the guy on trial, the pilot on trial, basically just on his own volition threw the charges out. So It seems, though, in terms of what Senator Gillibrand was trying to do, that seems reasonable. But the amazing thing was that she didn't get – she only got 55 votes. She didn't get to the 60-vote threshold that's required to overcome a filibuster. From other Democrats, Claire McCaskill of Missouri, and also on the Republican side, Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, not to mention, of course, the former presidential candidate, John McCain. So how do you explain the resistance going on the Democratic side to Senator Gillibrand's bill?
I think what it is looking at a big picture. Senator Gillibrand was trying to really attack at that 87% of troops who don't report. So what she was trying to do was well-intentioned, and it may have helped make the reporting go up, which would ultimately help us with getting the prosecutions to go up. But what we really needed was a different place for them to report, yes, other than their boss. But also, we did need the things that Claire McCaskill had suggested in her bill, the biggest things being getting rid of the good soldier defense, and also if the crime occurs off base, then the military member will have the chance or the opportunity to report it to the civilian without hopefully the military coming in and trying to take jurisdiction, which is what quite frequently happens. So really what we needed was a combination of all the bills, including Representative Spears, to make it the most comprehensive. But I applaud Senator Gillibrand for going after the root of the problem, which is the lack of reporting.
But what explains why Senate Armed Services Committee Chairman Carl Levin, who's considered a liberal, why does he argue in favor of the status quo against Gillibrand's bill?
I think that everybody falls victim to the same kind of mentality, which is the DOD quite often comes across like they know what they're talking about, that they're taking care of business, that you know they're trying to fix this, that they really do care. And I think that we are moving in that direction. I just don't think they realize, the leadership themselves realize, the extent of the problem that they've got in front of them as far as what it's going to take for legal expertise to clean up this mess because it's been let go for so long. And I think once we do open up this, to tell you the truth, I think that the reason that they're not supporting Gillibrand is they don't want to impact recruiting numbers. And when the truth comes out about how bad this really is, it will, in fact, impact recruiting numbers in the military.
So just to give our audience a sense of the problem, Jennifer, can you just describe what happened to you and why this is such a problem? Because, you know, you end up being victimized more than once. The sexual assault itself is should be enough, but then that gets compounded by the fact that you essentially are you know, the victim is the system turns on the victim, in effect. Is that what happened to you?
That's exactly what happened to me, unfortunately. The predators know that it's a he said, she said case within the military or, you know, whoever their victim is. And so they prey on those opportunities where they have the power to do what they've got to do, but also where they have the opportunity to do what they want to do. And then they know, bottom line, that it's going to get reported to their commander or whoever it is who they might be close to, and then they can just dampen it down and make it look like you just didn't, you know, respond well to their advance, when in fact it literally was a violation of human rights as to what they did. And the soldiers trying to remain strong by, you know, coming forward, letting someone know that this is what happened and that it's not okay.
So in your case, you had to leave the military because there was no justice for you, and the trauma of what happened to you was compounded by what by the lack of justice. And I take it that you had to leave the military because of post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yes, that's exactly what happened, and which is the reason why I'm so involved in these efforts, is I'd like to ultimately prevent the PTSD from getting to the debilitating state that I have it and other veterans have it, and have some healthy troops here, because all they need to do is report a crime and be supported through the process, and then they can move on with their career. But unfortunately, for some reason, nobody wants to deal with it, and it's too much work. And the next thing you know, people are resentful. People, you know, are thinking you might have made it up because they're friends with the perpetrator. There's all these inner dynamics that occur that beat your mind down. And after you've already been basically taken advantage of by someone, any other trauma that comes your way is just pushing the original trauma down, because they don't feel safe. And that's why the trust and the betrayal in the military is what's hurting us the most and leading to the suicide. They feel they have no way out if the person above them isn't going to support them. And that one person can't do it alone. We need a system in place to support them.
Well, one of the things I've found out in looking into this issue of sexual assault in the military is that while you know the figure out there is last year there was 26,000 cases, and as we've mentioned, that is way lower than only 10% or something of the real figure. But one of the things I found extraordinary was that whereas most of the cases are of male officers sexually assaulting subordinate female officers or enlisted people, there's also a lot of men are assaulted by other men in the military. And that's a big part of this that's not ever publicized.
That's right. And it goes to show how bad the predator problem really is. Predators don't discriminate. That's why we're pushing to have it pushed to the civilians, because all these predators, and I'm talking in garrison right now, we haven't even talked about how we're going to deal with it in a war environment. But at least here in the States and in places where the military bases are embedded within our state, we can work on this together and funnel all the people that are accused through one entity, one civilian entity, as opposed to dealing with a commander that might be transferring soon. The predator might be transferring soon. So that now what? There's all kinds of transient issues that come with trying to get justice in the military, whereas in the civilian sector, it is what it is. They've been doing this for a long time. You know, they're going to take down the statement. They may even arrest the person. They handle it the way it's supposed to be handled, as opposed to the way it feels like the military handles it, which is, I don't want to deal with this. Let's just make this go away. And then, the victim's being retaliated against and their career is over.
Well, just in closing, what do you think then of the bill by Congresswoman Jackie Speier, who, of course, was one of the people who founded the group Protect Our Defenders, which has mobilized more than 400 soldiers and veterans to tell Congress of their experience of being victimized by sexual crimes?
It is the bill. It's the closest thing we have to the real answer. It's been there all along. And it got stifled by, all these other things that happened along the way. And I want to bring it back because it gets to the crux of the real issue, which is, yes, do we have a reporting issue? Yes, we do. But we also have leadership issues, accountability issues, retaliation issues. So, you've got your officers in charge of your enlisted to take care of their punishment, but who's going to punish the officer? And when we do see them punished, quote unquote, it's basically, oh, bad boy, you're going to have to retire now. Or, oh, okay, well, we'll just do a plea bargain and you can retire too.
Well, Jennifer Norris, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Jennifer Norris, who's a former U.S. Air Force tech sergeant who was forced into early retirement because of post-traumatic stress disorder from military sexual trauma. She currently volunteers at the Military Rape Crisis Center, helping both active duty and veteran victims of sexual violence. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about this textbook case of political corruption in terms of campaign financing coming out of Utah.